Welcome to Cash Considerations, a Chicago Bull podcast on the Blue Wire Network. I'm Ricky O'Donnell. I'm with Jason Pat. As always, the NBA Finals going down right now. The Raptors with a 2-1 lead over the Golden State Warriors in the best of seven series. We got some moves ahead of the draft. The draft is June 20th on Thursday. There was a big trade that just went down right before we started recording this podcast between the Hawks and the Nets. I really like that move for both teams. Brooklyn creating two max salary slots. The Hawks getting the 17th pick this year, getting a lottery protected pick next year. I think those are two smart franchises who are doing some interesting things. And then we have the Chicago Bulls, who really have not done much at this point in the NBA offseason other than punt on their own salary cap space, because the Bulls already decided that they're not going to do much in free agency this year. The Bulls do have the 7th pick in the draft. It's been mostly quiet in terms of rumors up to this point, but Jason, you have heard a few things.
Well, first of all, the Bulls did just hire a new assistant coach. They hired Chris Fleming away from the Nets. We mentioned the Nets, and then they were going after the Texas Tech defensive coordinator. Did not get him, but they did just hire Roy Rogers, who was let go when the Rockets did their Mike D'Antoni coaching staff bloodletting, which was kind of crazy. Like, that whole Rockets thing is wild down there. Roy Rogers going to be helping the defense. Our guy Will Gottlieb a couple days ago when they made the hire official, or I don't even think they've made it official yet, but it was reported. He tweeted that he said he was told that Bulls new assistant coach Roy Rogers was a part of building the Rockets defense, had a big influence on Clint Capella's development. He works hard and the players love him. That seems like a great sign. You know, the Rockets took some strides on defense. Clint Capella's gotten a lot better. I know he had a really rough playoffs, but that'll happen against the Warriors. So, I mean, whatever. He's made a lot of improvements. And Will mentioned how the players love him. I know Patrick Beverley used to play for the Rockets, and Patrick Beverley, possible Bulls free agent target this summer, tweeted, he gave basically a shout-out to Roy Rogers. And then some fan tweeted back at Beverley, like, oh, man, like, said, he made some snarky comment about, like, joining the Bulls on the minimum. And then Beverley kind of shot back at him, like, oh, yeah, the minimum, all right? Like, yeah, right. And, I mean, obviously Patrick Beverley is not going to be signing for the minimum. But I believe he is someone the Bulls will probably go after. We have talked about going after Patrick Beverley, the Chicago guy. I think just in general, I don't know if we need to look too much into that, him making that comment. He is a Chicago guy, his former coach, obviously a fan of his. So it seems like a pretty good hire. Like, I can't really go in depth on Roy Rogers' schemes and all that stuff. Like, do you have any other takes on Roy Rogers, new Bulls assistant, and Jim Boylan's staff?
No, but I am glad that they're starting fresh. They're starting with guys that doesn't seem like they have like nepotism connections to. I think Fleming seems pretty interesting as an offensive guy. Roy Rogers, former player. The Bulls actually traded Scottie Pippen for him when they moved Scottie Pippen to the Rockets following the lockout after the 98 championship. So I think it's interesting in general, but you know, I think the Bulls are mostly just waiting for the 7th pick right now.
Right, yeah. Before we get into the draft talk, I know we're going to do plenty of draft talk here. Ricky's going to do a little Bulls big board. Before that, there was one other rumor. We talk about the offseason making moves. The Bulls will have some cap space, looking about like $20 million this year. Shams Trania of The Athletic and Stadium wrote a big column at The Athletic with a bunch of offseason rumors, stuff about Anthony Davis, stuff about a bunch of other stuff. There was a Bulls mention in there. Marcus Morris the Bulls are expected to have interest. I don't know how legit that is. I think Morris might be a Rich Paul guy. I can't remember. I'd look that up, but I don't know if that's something with an agent just drumming up interest. There were a bunch of other teams mentioned in that rumor as well, but Marcus Morris, do you have any thoughts? I wrote a quick thing at Bloggable about him. Like, he had a pretty nice season, stretch four type. Probably play the four or the five. He shot a lot of threes. Our pal, your friendly Bulls blogger, in the comments of the quick thing I wrote at Bloggable, kind of mentioned, like, it almost be like a Bobby Portis replacement. I don't know how you feel about Marcus Morris at all, but any quick thoughts about that?
How do you think he would fit into the locker room? Because he had plenty of issues in Boston, right? Didn't he?
I don't know how many. I mean, Boston was kind of just a mess in general between whatever Kyrie is doing and just like all the egos there. Like, I know he had issues. I think There was that whole thing a few years ago, and I think him and his brother were like charged with assault. I can't remember exactly what happened with that, but I know there have been some issues with the attitude there. Like, I know that they might look at it where he'll bring toughness, he'll bring an edge to the team that they need. I feel like that might be a situation where like it could work out really well. That toughness, they do need some toughness. Maybe that would work out. But then there's another scenario where he won't be happy with playing time if he's coming off the bench, if the Bulls aren't playing well. I don't know. I think the idea of his like type, it would be good as like the backup power forward. Just like, again, stretch four, kind of like a Bobby Portis, kind of a gunner, probably a little better defensively than Portis. I would wonder about how he would fit in the locker room. And I mean, I feel like a guy like him, probably a contender will look to bring him on. Like, I don't know why he'd really sign for the Bulls unless the Bulls like toss the bag at him. And I really wouldn't want the Bulls to toss the bag at him. Like, I feel like he could be like an MLE type for a contender. He made, I think, something like $5 or $6 million this year. Like, I'd be willing to go up, I don't know, give him a little more than that. But like, for what it would take to bring him to the Bulls, like, I feel like it probably won't happen. But I mean, it was still kind of an interesting rumor to see out there who the Bulls might be interested in. Like I said, I think the fit would make kind of sense, at least just on the court. But like you mentioned, that other stuff, I'm not totally sure.
Was he playing the three or the four for Boston mostly this year? I guess he's a guy who can swing between either position.
I think he was even playing. But I know Basketball Reference, and it's not perfect, but I think he was even playing some backup five. I don't know. I don't know. Like I said, the Celtics were so messed up. Let's see what Basketball Reference has for like his play, just like the play, whatever the position. I know they define the position or like the by time. Let's see, play by play. So according to this, he was 97% at power forward this year with the Celtics. In his past, when he was like with Detroit, he played a lot of small forward, but mostly with Boston, it was power forward, a little bit small forward, 2017, 2018, and then like a few random minutes at center.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I would probably pass on Marcus Morris. I don't think we need any Marcus Morris on this Bulls team. To me, he would fit better for a team that was closer to contending a little bit. I still think the Bulls, mostly every move they make should be about accentuating the young core, which is Wendell Carter Jr., Lauri Markkanen, Zach LaVine, and whoever they add with this seventh pick. I'm not really sure if adding Marcus Morris helps the development of Markkanen or helps the development of Carter or LaVine. So for that reason, I would likely pass on him.
I think that's totally fair. Like I said, I think it would make, with what they're looking for in terms of like veteran off the bench, I think it would make some sense. But like, I certainly am not married to the idea of Marcus Morris. Wouldn't want to overpay him, anything like that. So totally makes plenty of sense. That's basically it for like Bulls rumors for right now. And like I mentioned before, let's go talk about the draft. The draft is 2 weeks from today. Ricky, you said you got a little Bulls big board for us. Let's hit it up.
Yeah, I got a Bulls big board we're going to talk about. I got five guys who I think the Bulls should consider with the seventh pick. We're going to count them down from 5 to 1. We're going to talk about each player. Jason, you can stop me, ask some questions if at any point you want to. Don't let me ramble too long. But I got five guys who I think the Bulls would be wise to draft with that seventh pick. Maybe they could also trade down to get some of these guys. I think that is another option that should be on the table for the Bulls. There's a few guys we're ruling out here. Obviously, the top guy, Zion Williamson, we know he's going number one to the Pelicans. We know John Morant is going to go number two to the Memphis Grizzlies. At three, we would expect RJ Barrett to go to the New York Knicks. So there hasn't been any concrete news on that. And then we have fourth pick, the Lakers, fifth pick, the Cavs, sixth pick, the Suns. So I'm not taking any of the guys that those teams might draft off the board because we're not really sure who they're going to go. I think that, you know, where they're going to go, I think Darius Garland is likely to be off the board by the time the Bulls pick. I don't have him on my top five list anyway, because I'm not a huge Darius Garland fan. I might end up looking foolish for that a few years from now, but these are the five guys I think the Bulls should consider. So number five, Grant Williams, junior power forward from Tennessee, back-to-back SEC player of the year. He won it as a sophomore a year ago, came back this season and improved his numbers across the board. Grant Williams, about 6'7", 240-pound power forward. the selling point for Grant Williams is that while he's not a great positional fit on the Bulls, who already have two front court guys entrenched in Carter and Markkanen, I think there's an argument that he could be the best basketball player remaining at number seven. His output over the last 2 years was really remarkable. And following his SEC Player of the Year winning sophomore season, he raised his numbers all across the board. This year, tremendous 64.7% true shooting percentage. I want to say average is about 55% on a true shooting percentage. So he was a really efficient scorer. Not a great three-point shooter, though he did improve this past season, shot 14 of 44, which is good for 32% from three. I think the three-point shooting is the swing skill for him. That's going to be the case for a lot of guys in this draft. What he has going for him right now is that he's strong as hell. Grant Williams will just beat you up. He's also really smart, and he's a good passer. So you have a guy who's going to have NBA-ready strength and physicality right away, someone who can shine on the glass, someone who can pass the ball really well, especially out of like short roll scenarios in the pick and roll, someone who can protect the rim a little bit, who can draw fouls, which he did at an elite rate at Tennessee. Grant Williams finished number 22 in the country in fouls drawn per 40. I just think that he would be not a perfect fit for the Bulls because they already have Carter and Markkanen and Trench, but in a lot of ways, I think that you could go with a three big man rotation with Grant Williams there, and it would benefit him. So one of the things with this draft class is, one of the main storylines is that it's bad because a lot of the top incoming recruits disappointed. You could look at Romeo Langford. You could look at Nasir Little. You could look at Cam Reddish. None of those guys are on my board in this top five. Conversely, the guys who kind of improve their stock over the course of the college season are all big men. Brandon Clark, Grant Williams, PJ Washington. So I think that those guys, it's just like unfortunate for the Bulls, kind of. They put themselves in this position by taking Carter and Markkanen during a time when, let's be honest, Jason, I think most NBA teams nowadays would play Markkanen at the five. The Bulls are hoping he's going to be able to stick at the four long term because they drafted another center in Carter with the seventh pick. I love Carter. I think Carter's their best guy. I think Markkanen's really interesting too and has an all-star type of ceiling. Ideally, you want to take a winger or guard with this pick if you're the Bulls. Ideally, you want a point guard because, as the Bulls will tell you, they have their two through five of the future set. Well, what the Bulls really just need are good, smart basketball players who play both ends of the court. That's why Grant Williams is my number five guy, junior power forward, really just strong, smart, good passer, efficient scorer. That's the selling point on Grant Williams. I think he would back up Markkanen initially. I think that, you know, you'd have a three big man rotation with those three guys. You'd play Markkanen at the five and Williams at the four for some stretches. Most of your front court minutes would be allocated between those three guys. I think all of them could be potentially. And I really like Grant Williams from Tennessee. He's someone who's sort of become the hipster's choice in this NBA draft. His stock amongst guys with Twitter accounts is a lot bigger than it is amongst NBA scouts, apparently. We'll see
there again. Let me stop you for a second there, because I was going to ask about that. I'm looking at the ESPN, the most recent ESPN mock draft. They have Grant Williams going 32nd. They have him going in the second round. Where is the disconnect here, do you think, between like what you're thinking and why the ESPN has it, like the Draft Express guys have him at 32?
Sure, because he's a 6'7 power forward who doesn't have great shooting range. I think he makes up for those flaws by just being a really smart, tough, strong basketball player who plays both ends of the court. Great passer, great defensive player. He was an 81% free throw shooter, which tells you that perhaps he can improve that three-point stroke. I think, you know, being able to draw that many fouls and sink that many free throws, he's just going to continue to develop his perimeter game as he goes along. He's also pretty young for his class. He was born in November of 1998. So I think that he's someone who potentially could come in right away and be a productive rotation guy. I think, you know, NBA scouts are mostly looking at what he can't do, which is that he hasn't proven himself as a shooter and that he's undersized. You know, in a lot of ways, you would think of Grant Williams as a throwback power forward, but I think he makes up for it with his smarts, his passing ability, his strength. And I think that he does have high shooting potential because he was an efficient scorer all over the court and he was a really good free throw shooter, which tends to predict future 3-point shooting pretty accurately.
Yeah, interesting. Yeah, I'm just curious because I know I've heard good things. I've read, you mentioned like the hipster thing, like I've seen like that kind of stuff on Twitter and people hyping him up. So I was just curious, like looking at the ESPN, just where the whole difference was there. So that's interesting. Should we move ahead to number four?
Yeah. So number four for me, a guy I published a story on this week at SBNation.com. It's Bol Bol. Now, Bol Bol to me has some of the most variance in his stock. If you look at where The Athletic has him, their big board, their draft coverage done by Sam Vecenie, who just does a tremendous job covering the draft for The Athletic, he is Bol Bol 32. ESPN has Bol Bol 15. Jeremy Wu, a Chicago guy who does draft coverage for Sports Illustrated, he has Bol Bol at, I want to say, like 22 in his big board. I haven't really done a big board at SB Nation. I would have Bol Bol in the top 10, and I might have him in the top 5. I really like Bol Bol quite a bit for a few different reasons. Bol Bol size, 7'2", wingspan 7'7". Only played 9 games this year for Oregon because he broke a bone in his foot. Before that, he entered the program as a top 5 overall recruit in this recruiting class. What's special about Bol Bol? No one with his size in his length has ever had his shooting ability. He has a 9'7.5" standing reach. So that means he can almost, you know, touch the rim without jumping. He has a 7'7" wingspan. Even if you bump that down to 7'6" wingspan, these are the other guys who recently tested at the combine who have a 7'6" wingspan. We're talking about Andre Drummond. We're talking about someone like Brendan Haywood, who played a long time ago. We're talking about Mo Bamba, who to me is the most obvious comparison for Bol. Rudy Gobert is on that list. Ike Anabugo, who played at UCLA a year ago. I'm sure I'm butchering that last name. He played at UCLA, was drafted.
Oh, yeah.
By,
I know who you're talking about.
Pacers. What do all those guys have in common? Gobert, Bamba, Andre Drummond is another one. They're all non-shooters. Bol Bol is an elite shooter. He shot 52% from three-point range. He only took 2.8 attempts per game, but he was also a tremendous shooter on the EYBL, Nike's AAU circuit. He was one of the league leaders in three-point shooting a year earlier on the AAU circuit, shooting, I believe, 44% from three-point range. I don't have the exact number in front of me. Yeah, it was 44% on the EYBL, 52% at Oregon. He made 82% of his free throws on the EYBL, and at Oregon, he made 76%. So Bol Bol is just an absolutely elite shooter. The Stepien, which is an independent draft website that does tremendous coverage, check out their work. They track attempts from three-point range or from NBA three-point range. He was 13 of 19, Bol Bol was, on those attempts. So obviously Bol Bol is a center. Bol Bol has a history of foot problems just, you know, this year at Oregon. I guess he didn't have one previously before that, I don't believe. He also is really skinny. He weighed in at 208 pounds. So he's very thin. He has skinny legs and high hips. He already has a bad foot. Durability is the biggest issue to me with Bol Bol. The next biggest issue is just strength. Does he even have the frame to add strength? Obviously, there's no 7'2" guy who's 208 pounds. It's totally ridiculous. I'm sure we have listeners who are like 6 foot and 210 pounds. So it just shows you just how light and how thinly built Bol Bol is. That is certainly a worry. You will also hear people talk about his character. A lot of the mainstream college basketball reporters haven't been high on him because they think he has character concerns. And there might be some validity to that. I'm not going to project that. All I know is that there has never been someone as long as Bol Bol who has his shooting ability. I honestly think he has special shooting ability. He has kind of a low and slow release, but he's still going to be able to shoot over the top of any switch defender, and no one's going to be able to give him an inch of room because when he's open, he was in the 99th percentile in the country on catch and shoot opportunities this year. I think he's going to have immense gravity, Jason, as someone who, you know, you can never cheat off of him, whether he's just standing above the arc, whether he's standing in the corner. I think, you know, you got to stick to Bol Bol. And if you give him breathing room, if you dare him to hit a jump shot, he's going to hit it. So I think the team that gets Bol Bol and encourages him to let it fly, to boost that three-point volume as high as it could possibly go, is going to be a major winner of this draft. Defensively, the question is, can he be a switch big? We know he has those high hips. He doesn't have great lateral quickness. You know, could he, in today's NBA, you're basically asking your centers to switch a screen and stick with a point guard for a few seconds. I don't know if Bol Bol could do that. But my argument for him is that the league Bol Bol is drafted into today, when he's 19 years old in 2019, is probably not going to look like the league he's playing in when he's 24, when he's 27, if he can stick around the league that long. We've already seen NBA teams experiment quite a bit with zone defense. The Raptors, for one, famously played a box and one for a stretch in the NBA Finals. The Raptors played zone quite a bit against the Bucks in the Eastern Conference Finals. A lot of teams played zone this year in the NBA. It was one of the most under-the-radar emerging trends in the league was zone defense. I think Bol Bol could be a stud in zone defense. He has unbelievable length. His block rate was tremendous, over 12% this year, which would have been in the top 10 of the country if he would have stayed healthy and played the full amount of games. So to me, Bol Bol, while not like he's going to be an offense first prospect because he has special shooting ability, he has a developing handle where I actually think he's going to be able to beat a closeout when defenses do run at him, put the ball on the floor, hit you with a floater, hit you with a pull up. When you switch on him, he's going to be able to finish over smaller defenders in the post, even if he can't finish over like Marc Gasol or Joel Embiid in the post. So I love Bol Bol. Again, not a perfect fit because the Bulls have the seventh pick. They already have Markkanen and Carter. Bol Bol, obvious red flags, I think, with the injury history, with the lack of strength. This guy is an unbelievable shooter, though. I think you compare him to Bamba. So now Bamba was ranked third on ESPN's big board. The Athletic had him fifth, SI had him fifth. Bol's rankings on these sites, 15, 32, and 21. Bol is better almost across the board. Bol Bol shot 52% on threes. Bamba shot 27%. Bol Bol had a true shooting percentage of 63%. Bamba was 59%. Bol Bol's block rate was 12.4%. Bamba's was 13.2%, so not that big of a difference. Bol Bol's assist rate, 9.7%. Bamba, 3.6%. So he's three times better as a passer. They have the same standing reach. To me, Bamba was drafted number 6 overall last year on the prayer, on the miracle chance that one day he could be a shooter like Bol Bol. I mean, he'll never be half as good as Bol Bol, as far as I'm concerned. But Bamba went high in part because he's really polished. He probably sold himself well in interviews. If you talk to him, Bamba's a great interview, really interesting guy. I think he could be a politician one day, really, because he's a really articulate speaker, seems like a smart dude. And he's a better, like, he moves better than Bol does, doesn't have the same injury history. To me, Bol's a better prospect than Bamba, though, because he's way, way, way better as a shooter. I think he can put the ball on the floor better. I think he can pass better. I think his length is the exact same. His block rate was very similar. He might not move as well, but his length is still going to be a total game changer with a 9.75 standing reach. I love Bol Bol. Honestly, I think he's a top 5 prospect in this whole draft in a vacuum. The durability questions kind of push him down a bit. Obviously, the Bulls, they don't want to draft a third center because Markkanen and Carter are centers to most teams. But I really like Bol Bol. He's number 4 on my Chicago Bulls big board.
Nice. I know next to nothing about him. I will take all your word for it there. So before we get into your top 3, let's hear a word from our sponsors.
When you're selling online, getting your orders out can be a real pain. That's why you need ShipStation.com. It's the fastest, easiest, and most affordable way to manage and ship your orders. No matter where you're selling, Amazon, Etsy, or your own website, ShipStation brings all your orders into one simple interface. ShipStation helps you get orders out quickly, save money on shipping costs, and keep your customers happy. Right now, Cash Considerations listeners can try ShipStation free for 60 days when you use the promo code BLUE. That's blue as in blue wire. There's absolutely no risk. You can start your free trial without entering your credit card info. ShipStation works with all major carriers, including USPS, FedEx, UPS, even Amazon Fulfillment, so you can compare and choose the best shipping solution for your customer. No wonder ShipStation is the number one choice of online sellers. You'll ship more in less time with the best rates available. Just visit ShipStation.com, click on the microphone at the top of the homepage and type in blue. That's ShipStation.com, enter promo code blue. ShipStation.com, make ship happen.
Now we got another announcement to make. Blue Wire is teaming up with Harry's to make sure our listeners are shaving comfortably. Go to harrys.com/bluewire to save $10 on a valued trial set, which includes 5-blade razor with a lubricating strip and trimmer blade, a rich lathering shave gel, and a travel blade cover. You get all that for just $3 shipped right to your door. Enough of the cheap razors. It's totally worth trying Harry's. Harry's has fixed shaving by combining a simple, clean design with quality and durable blades at a fair price. Harry's founders were tired of paying for razors that were overpriced and over-designed. So they bought a world-class blade factory in Germany that's been making quality blades for over 95 years. So join the 10 million who have tried Harry's and claim your trial offer by going to harrys.com/bluewire. All of Harry's blades come with a 100% quality guarantee. And if you don't love your shave, let them know and they'll give you a full refund. Again, make sure you go to harrys.com/bluewire to redeem your razor for $3.
All right, we're on to number three on my Bulls big board, Jason. It's PJ Washington, a sophomore power forward from Kentucky, 6'8", 230 pounds with a 7.5 wingspan. Another front court player, PJ Washington, was one of my favorite guys this year at Kentucky, though. PJ Washington, a McDonald's All-American, entering Kentucky, had a good freshman year, tested his stock at the combine, decided to come back, and he came back a much better player as a sophomore. The big improvement in PJ Washington's game was his three-point shooting ability. As a freshman, PJ Washington shot 5 of 21 from 3. That's 23%. This year as a sophomore, 33 of 78, 42.3%. He was Kentucky's best three-point shooter this year, better than even Tyler Hero. Length, strength, and shooting ability are what you get with PJ Washington. I am pretty sold on his three-point stroke being legitimate in the NBA. It'll be interesting because he was not a good free throw shooter, only 66.3% from the foul line. That is troubling to me, but he was a money shooter for the majority of the time at Kentucky. I think he's interesting because you can maybe even get away with some minutes at the three for him. If you're the Bulls, go on Fansided on the step back. There was an article there by someone who wrote about PJ Washington's potential as a wing. I think that that's you know, something that is pretty interesting about him. He's got a lot of versatility in terms of how he can be moved around the chessboard, I think. Really strong guy as well, similar to Grant Williams in that those two guys battled it out for SEC Player of the Year all season. PJ Washington, a little bit better of a shot blocker, blocked 5% of his shots while he was on the floor this year, 59% true shooting percentage, so he's an efficient scorer. He has some range on his jumper. Still a decent passer, not as good as Williams. He had a 13% assist rate, Williams at 18%. But I really like PJ Washington. I think that, again, you know, not a perfect fit for the Bulls, just given the type of talent that's going to be available in this draft. But he has a little bit more lineup flexibility because I think you can slide him 3 to 5. I think he's really strong. He's a good shooter. He's a pretty smart player. I think he could be a really good defender. John Calipari tends to depress the value of his players during their college year, in my opinion. Washington posted a 4.8% block rate, 1.7% steal rate, was able to draw fouls well. So I like PJ Washington quite a bit. I mean, you know, I can also argue Bol Bol would be better for the Bulls. You can argue Washington or Grant Williams, which was the debate going on for SEC Player of the Year all season. I really like PJ Washington, though, especially in a trade-down scenario. I would love for the Bulls to get him. And even at 7, I think, you know, there could be some scenarios where they should consider him because I think that he has a high floor. He also has a pretty high ceiling in terms of his untapped potential. Long, strong, good standstill shooter, efficient scorer, can put a guy on his back and score in the post. Just does a lot of little things. I like PJ Washington quite a bit.
Yeah, let's move on. And like I said, I have not much to say about, so especially some of these back guys. I saw some Kentucky this year. He was pretty impressed from what I saw, but like I said, I'm rolling with you on these, my guy. So let's go ahead to number two.
Sure, let's go to number two. That's Coby White, someone who, it was reported by Casey Johnson of the Chicago Tribune that Coby White has a promise in front of the Bulls. I wouldn't be surprised if the Bulls were the team that actually promised him. We know the Bulls made it.
I feel like I've seen both things there. Like, I feel like I've seen some people say that it's the Bulls who promised. I saw the Casey thing that said he was promised in the top six. I mean, who? I guess you never really know at this time of year.
Yeah, this is the season, draft season, when there's so much misinformation spread because everyone's got their own agenda. If Coby White is on the board, I think the Bulls are for sure going to consider him. We've talked about Coby White quite a bit. He's a 6'4" and a half, 180-pound point guard from North Carolina. Basically, the story on Coby White is that he broke the North Carolina high school record for most points scored in his career. He had like 3,500 points almost as a high school scorer. Came to North Carolina. They made him a point guard, and I think he exceeded expectations at point guard for Carolina this year. Carolina played at the fastest tempo they ever have since KenPom started tracking statistics in 2002. North Carolina finished with the number 6 overall tempo rating in the country this year. The only schools ahead of them were low majors, and they also were really efficient. They were number 8 in the country in offensive efficiency. So with Coby White at the controls, North Carolina played super fast and super efficiently. He has good size at 6'4 and 3 quarters. He's basically 6'5 with the afro. He doesn't quite play as big as his listed height because he has short arms, only about a 6'4 wingspan, 6'5 wingspan. And also at the U18 trials a year ago when he was playing for USA Basketball in a FIBA event, posted the lowest max vertical on the team, supposedly. So not a super explosive athlete, not very long, might only be a one-position defender in the NBA. But what I like about Coby White is that he can just create offense off the dribble. He's great in transition. I think he's learning how to play point guard, where he already graded out pretty well compared to some of his contemporaries that I'm going to mention here. So I think Coby White, you know, potentially could be the Bulls point guard of the future. There's also a scenario where the Bulls either sign a veteran, get a draft pick next year that's high, and take a point guard, where then Coby White's playing some two. Coby White is a really good shooter. He was in the 92nd percentile in the country in catch-and-shoot situations. Ended the year at 35% from deep, but he had a really high volume, which I think is also a good sign for a prospect. He took 232 three-pointers this year at North Carolina, 80% free-throw shooter. Where Coby White struggled a bit was as a pull-up shooter. He was only in the 27th percentile in pull-up attempts this year. His form looks pretty good on pull-up. So obviously dribble pull-up is one thing that can really change a player's career, like Damian Lillard, Kyrie Irving. A lot of the best guards in the league are ace dribble pull-up guys. I think Coby White, even though he didn't perform super efficiently during his one season at North Carolina, he's got quite a bit of potential as a pull-up shooter. So I wouldn't be too discouraged by that number. We already know he's a great free throw shooter, a great catch and shoot guy. I think, you know, he might ultimately project as a sixth man, potentially. I think that's a conservative, safe projection for him. But there's also a chance he could be the point guard of the future with his 24.5 assist rate. I got a few guys up here, Jason, who he reminds me of. We're going to go with CJ McCollum. We're going to go with Colin Sexton. We're going to go with Jamal Murray. And then I'll even say D'Angelo Russell, whose numbers I'll pull up really quickly. I don't have him in front of me at the moment. But we'll start with CJ. We'll start with Coby White's numbers just so we have a baseline. So Coby White, these are the numbers I want to compare him in. True shooting percentage, Coby White, 55.5. Let's go with CJ McCollum. He was at 55.6 in college during his junior year at Lehigh when he played 35 games. CJ McCollum the next year, his senior year, got hurt. So we're not going to talk about that season for him. But you know, true shooting percentage, exactly the same. CJ McCollum and Coby White during CJ's last full season. Colin Sexton, who has not proven himself, he was 56.7 when he was at Alabama last year. Jamal Murray's true shooting percentage was 59, so he had the best. And then you have D'Angelo Russell, who was 57.3. So Coby White is all in the mix with those guys in terms of true shooting percentage. They're all about the same height. They're all between 6'4 and 6'5. They're all sort of combo guards. So that's why I'm listing these guys together. Sexton about 6'3, CJ about 6'3. So, you know, take that for what it's worth. But all about the same size, all similar skill sets. Remember that CJ was playing in like low level competition at Lehigh. His assist rate was 24.5, Coby White 24.4. So Coby White's comparing favorably to CJ in assist rate. Sexton was 27.8. Jamal Murray only 12.1, so he had the lowest by far, and D'Angelo Russell's was 30. So within 5 percentage points of everyone is Coby White at 24.4. He's significantly higher than Jamal Murray. He's right there with everyone else. I think that, you know, that's another encouraging sign. Free throw percentage, how Coby White shot free throws this year, 80%. 104 for 130. I think that's pretty interesting. Now, Sexton was a monster drawing fouls. He shot 78%. He drew 252 foul shots. CJ McCollum also much better at drawing fouls, but he was an 81% free throw shooter. You could look at D'Angelo. He shot 156 foul shots at 75%. Jamal Murray was a 78% shooter at 152 shots. Again, Kobe White took 130 free throws at 80% this year. So Kobe White, not a great foul drawer, but he is a great foul shooter. You would look at steal percentage. Kobe White, 2.0. Jamal Murray, 1.6. Colin Sexton, 1.6. CJ McCollum, remember, he was playing in a lower level competition, but his steal rate was 4.6, actually. And then D'Angelo Russell had 2.8. So Kobe White stacks up decently to those guys as well with the 2.0 steal rating. Those are the guys who I compare him to. I think that, you know, in a league where you need shifty ball handlers, you need shooters, both on the catch and shoot and the pull up, you need dudes who can pass, which Kobe White can do. And that's where I think his upside is as a passer. He's a pretty intriguing player to me. Now, I don't think he's like a franchise changer at number seven, but he's good. He can fit in a lot of different lineups. He's someone who I think, you know, if LaVine is going to continue to take a bigger responsibility initiating the offense and being sort of the lead, de facto lead guard, Kobe White's a great guy to compliment him because they can both do it. Kobe White plays fast. He had a 25% assist rate, so he can get his teammates involved. He can shoot the ball, the lead off the catch and shoot. He's getting better, I think, as a pull-up shooter. He might only be a one-position defender, but I don't think he'll be terrible as a defensive player. So those are the kind of guys I compare Kobe White to, and I think he's interesting for a Bulls team that definitely needs a guard. Maybe he does, you know, continue to develop as a facilitator. He was never asked to be a facilitator at the high school level. He sort of just hit the ground running when he got to North Carolina, performed pretty well with that 25% assist rate. So Kobe White, I like him. He's my number two pick on the Bulls board.
So, yeah, you mentioned before that you're like not a big Garland fan. Could you explain, I know one of those guys is at least is probably going to be gone, but if you just like, if both were hypothetically available at number seven, you would take Kobe White over Garland?
Yeah, I would take Kobe White over Garland because I think that he just has a little bit more versatility to him as a player. Garland, I think, is wild. Like, Garland had more turnovers than assists this year. Garland's assist rate was 25%, but he was turning it over at a 23% rate. I don't think that Darius Garland can really score in the paint. Now, Garland's true shooting percentage was really high. You know, Garland's interesting because he's a good off-the-dribble pull-up three-point shooter, but I don't love Darius Garland. I think he's not going to be that good of a defensive guard. I think that there's major questions about his facilitating ability. I don't really think he's going to be there, but I don't love Darius Garland in general. So he's off my board.
Totally fair. All right, so let's go. Number one, who I'm guessing it's Jarrett Culver.
Number one is Jarrett Culver, sophomore from Texas Tech. Basically, the story with Jarrett Culver is that he was a three-star recruit entering the program. He entered alongside Zaire Smith, who, of course, became a lottery pick or maybe one pick outside of the lottery to the 76ers a year earlier. Culver returned for his sophomore season and really blew up this year. Took Texas Tech all the way to the national title game. Culver was so good across the board, he actually finishes the number one player in the country in KenPom's Player of the Year rankings. 6'6". And a half, 200 pounds, pretty long arms, 6'9", 6'10", wingspan. What I like about Jarrett Culver, great off-ball defender, really smart, really good passer, can run a pick and roll, basically played de facto point guard this year for Texas Tech. I would like to see him continue to develop that skill set in the NBA. I think he sort of lacks takeover scoring ability, and that's one reason why guys might get overdrafted. His three-point percentage, only 30.4% this year for Jarrett Culver. That's certainly troubling. Doesn't really shoot a great ball. But on Synergy Sports, every play type, be it cuts, be it spot-ups, be it pick-and-roll, ball handler, Jarrett Culver ranked good or better. So he was solid and efficient all across the board. 54% true shooting percentage doesn't blow you away, but he rebounded well. He had a 2.8 steal rate, a 2.1 block rate. Really good defensive player, draws fouls on offense, passes well on offense, 70% free throw shooter. So I just like Jarrett Culver because I think you can run him on the ball. He gives you tremendous line of versatility. To me, versatility is the name of the game in today's NBA. There is a thought that maybe Jarrett Culver ends up like Evan Turner. And if that's his floor, I think that, you know, that's a little disappointing. but I love his versatility on both ends. I like how he can initiate the offense. He really just knows like the beats of the game, when to fire a pass. He can run the pick and roll really well. I just like Culver in general. I think he finishes well at the rim. He would just give the Bulls a lot of lineup versatility, and I would like to see him continue to develop his point guard skills. So number one on my Bulls draft board, Jarrett Culver, wing from Texas Tech.
So for those who maybe didn't follow college basketball that close until the tournament or something like that, they watch the national title game. They see DeAndre Hunter basically own Jarrett Culver. What would you say to those people to say, don't worry about that? Like, do you think Culver is definitely the better prospect than Hunter? I mean, I think right now Hunter and most mocks is projected higher. What would you say to people who saw like seemingly a huge golf there, Elliot, in that one game? I mean, you never want to judge based on that one game, but Hunter was amazing in the national title game. Culver really struggled in that game and struggled in a few of those later games. What do you have to say about that and just quelling those fears maybe based on if people who saw that game?
Sure. I was in the building in Minneapolis for the national title game, and Hunter no doubt was impressive. He washed Culver in that matchup, and in a lot of ways, I think Hunter is considered a superior prospect. Because, you know, Hunter, also very long, 6'7", 225 pounds. What do you measure with a 7'1 wingspan at Virginia this year? 44% three-point shooter, but got him off at low volume. Only took 105 attempts on the year. So here's the difference to me. Hunter. Hunter's a good shooter, but he has a really, really slow release. It takes him forever to get off the shot. He also can't create offense off the dribble at all. He's got very rudimentary creation skills. Defensively, he is really good as a point of attack defender, but he just doesn't get the ball the way that Jarrett Culver does. He only had a 1.2 steal rate. You could say that Virginia depresses the steal rates of their guys, but Ty Jerome had a 3.0 steal rate, three times as high nearly as DeAndre Hunter. Ty Jerome is projected to be a late first rounder in this draft as a 6'5 guard. So Hunter, I think his defense is a little overrated. I'd rather have Culver as a defender because I think he's better roaming off the ball. I think he's better at just getting the ball, getting blocks and steals, making big plays defensively. I think he might have quicker feet in terms of him guarding guards, whereas Hunter might be able to be a little stronger and guard front court guys on switches. Hunter is a good shooter, but he needs so much time to get off a shot, and he can't really create and beat a closeout when you run him off the line. So Hunter, to me, not a bad prospect. I would like Hunter as like the 20th overall pick in this draft. I don't really like him as the 7th overall pick. I'm surprised. His stock is so high. He's also one of the older guys in this draft. He's a redshirt sophomore. He was born in December of 1997. So I wouldn't touch DeAndre Hunter. If the Bulls do take him, you know, I'll talk myself into him probably because they do need a wing who can shoot, which he can do. Defends as well, kind of like the Mikal Bridges of this year. I like Bridges better because I think he has more versatility as a defender and as a shooter. Hunter, he's not a very interesting prospect to me. Just doesn't do anything quickly enough to stand out to me. I think his defense, while impressive, is slightly overrated because he's better at point of attack than help and recover. So I don't love DeAndre Hunter. I take Culver over him, despite the fact that Hunter outplayed Culver in their one head-to-head matchup this year.
Totally fair. I definitely did notice the shot creation lacking. I feel like every time I tried to dribble, it was really terrible. And I feel like maybe Hunter is like safer because he's a good shooter. I don't even know if that's the right way to put it either. But like, I feel like at least Culver's got more upside. If you're looking for a more dynamic player on both ends of the ball, it seems like the fair way to put it.
Yeah, and that's it. That's my top five. So to go over it one more time. Number one, Jarrett Culver. Number two, Coby White. Number three, PJ Washington. Number four, Bol Bol. Number five, Grant Williams. If it gets outside the top two, hell, maybe if it gets outside of the top one, Bulls should look at the trade down as an option. Atlanta sitting there with 17, 8, and 10 now. That's really interesting. Could you get 10 and 17 for number seven? That'd be an incredible haul for the Bulls. If they could do that, I'd move down if they could. I think Atlanta probably wants Jarrett Culver if he's still on the table. At number seven, they could trade up, although they might do that trade with the team in front of the Bulls, because I think Atlanta likes Culver. That's sort of been the whispering around a lot of people who know things around the NBA. So.
I think I just saw a rumor about trading up even to five with Cleveland. I literally just saw it 5 minutes ago, but I can't can't remember who actually had the tweet. So I just wrap it. I know I saw Cleveland, as Cleveland mentioned, and they're at number five.
Yeah. So that'd be a good trade, I think, for a lot of teams. I mean, if Atlanta's going to offer you two top 17 picks for your pick, that's interesting. Boston, like we said, they have 14, 20, and 22. They're another trade down option. So could be interesting for the Bulls. I think, you know, if you're looking for more trade down guys, we'll probably talk about that next week. But I like Talen Horton Tucker, a Chicago kid who played for Iowa State last year quite a bit. I think he'd be good. Is a trade down candidate. I kind of like Romeo Langford as a trade down candidate too. He was a miserable 3-point shooter for Indiana this year, but he was the number six recruit in the RSCI coming into college. Scored really efficiently on pull-ups in general, just kind of a crafty scorer with good touch, but couldn't shoot threes. Maybe you make a mechanical change. He's still really young. I'd target him in a trade down. So, you know, the Bulls are going to have some options if they stay at seven, though. My preference is Culver 1, White 2.
That's fair. How about Bulls do also have the 38th pick. Do you have any second round names there that you have an eye on that you'd like them to look at or might be available?
Sure. If they don't take Kobe White, one guy I would look at is Shamari Ponds, who's really good this year, the last couple of years for St. John's. He's also in the same mold, kind of a combo guard. He's smaller. He's only 6 foot, but he got a ton of steals for St. John's this year. He averaged 2.6 steals a game. He was pretty good in terms of assist to turnover ratio, averaged 5 assists and only 2 turnovers. Really good free throw percentage. His 3-point percentage was 35%, but he's got some pull up skill. So Shamari Ponds would be someone if they don't take White, who I would look at. I like Charles Matthews quite a bit, who's another local kid, played his high school ball at St. Rita, went to Michigan, 6'6", 200 pounds. I think arguably the best defensive wing in this class. Charles Matthews, 22 years old, but he is a great defensive player. Only hit 30% of his threes. Not someone who can really create off the dribble, but his value defensively, I think, is really, really interesting. So I would look at him. Another name I'll throw out there, Darius Baisley, who is the 5-star recruit who sat out the year, signed with Clutch Sports, the agency of LeBron's friend Rich Paul. He was going to go to Syracuse. He did not honor that commitment, sat out the whole year after flirting with playing in the G League to just train for the draft. 6'9", 7-foot wingspan, shoots the ball well, was really impressive at the combine, supposedly has been impressing teams in private workouts. He might not be on the board at 38, but I think if he is, that would be another guy I'd take a look at.
Interesting. Awesome. I think that we should be good for today. We're going to have a lot more draft stuff next week. Like I said, 2 weeks away from the draft, so I think next week we'll be making that like our official draft preview. This was a nice little teaser for it. I think we're good, right? We good for this week?
I think we are.
All right, awesome. So as always, shout out Blue Wire Pods and NBA Finals. Please listen to our Blue Wire Buckets, our playoff pods. We were doing pods after each finals game. Go check out all the other great pods all across the network. We're adding them at a rapid pace. I believe we just added NBA draft guy Jonathan Wasserman, I believe the Bleacher Report guy, which is awesome. And since the Warriors are in the finals, the Light Years pod, always good stuff. And with the Warriors now, it's really interesting with the KD injury still not coming back. Klay Thompson will probably be coming back, but the finals have been pretty fascinating so far. So that's a lot of fun. And as always, please go check out us. Rate and review us at all places. Apple Podcasts, RIP iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, Google Play. Go follow Blue Wire Network on Twitter at Blue Wire Pods. So from Jason and Ricky, this has been Cash Considerations. Have a good one. We'll see you guys next week.